If you enjoy the FitCast, please help support the show by going to patreon.com/thefitcast. That's patreon.com/thefitcast. And there you can start supporting this show at just $1 per episode. And you can even cap it at a dollar amount on a per month basis. So if you need to, you can always go at $2 per month total, no matter how many episodes that come out. Going into 2015, it's going to be really important that I get the support of the audience because my schedule is getting real crazy, and you've seen that I've been able to keep the show on a weekly basis thanks to the Patreon supporters. But as time gets shorter and shorter for my free time, I'm going to need more support from the audience to make sure I can just justify the sacrifice of free time to make sure that this show keeps getting produced and sent to you every single week. So thank you to everyone that is supporting the show, and I really hope if you aren't, you go and check out the website. And like I said, it's just a dollar, so you know, hopefully the show is worth that to you. And thank you again to everyone that is out there supporting the show, and I hope you guys have a great rest of the year. Hello, welcome back to the FitCast. This is episode number 321. I am Kevin Larrabee, and I got a super show lined up for you this week with two phenomenal guests. I'm lucky if I can get one of them on the show, let alone both of them at the same time. But they got this awesome new book coming out called The Lean Muscle Diet, which by the time that you hear this, it's available now and you can pick it up at Amazon.com. It's like 20 bucks. And coming from these two guys, it's an immediate must purchase. So hopefully you go check that out if you haven't already. But the two people that I do have on the line is, first off, Alan Aragon, of course, of the Research Review, of many other things, and of course this new book. How you doing, man?
Doing great. Thank you so much for having me on.
And we also got the wonderful and talented Lou Schuler, who is back on for his, I think, still league leading. I think it's like the sixth or seventh time that he's been on the show. Something like that. No, maybe more than that.
Well, I don't know how many times it is. I depend on you to keep track. All I know is that whenever you want me on, I don't seem to have anything else to do. So I'm easy.
No, it works out perfectly. I still think you and Dan John are going to keep fighting that battle. That I don't know what you're really fighting over, but it's a good battle because I get to have two great people on, and they both like coming on. So it's very, very good for me. But like I said, we have a lot of stuff to talk about, and we're going to do our best with, you know, having two people on the show. I'll do my best to hand things off and make sure everything is as organized as possible. And, you know, I will mention, you know, just to be super, super safe, if you are going to be listening to this in front of kids, you might not want to. I mean, there might be some swears that pop out here and there, like on any other episode. So if that is something that you are concerned about, you know, maybe save this one for when you're walking the dog and throwing in the headphones and stuff like that. Now, with all that being said, the first thing I want to talk to you guys about is, you know, really the origin of the book, because it's not like you get an idea for a book and then, you know, in 3 months it's out. It's kind of a rather long progress from the times that I've talked to you, Lou, about, you know, all the books that you've put together. But Kelly Davis had a great question, and of course also a former guest on the show, just to have you guys talk about really what that process was like. And I'll throw it off to you first, Lou, to kind of see what was the origin? How was this thing birthed?
You know, I'm really glad Kelly asked that question, because I had a completely false memory of how this all got started. But how it actually started is actually better than my memory, because in November of 2012, and I actually looked this up after I read Kelly's question on Facebook, November 2012, I was working on an article for Men's Health magazine, and I emailed Alan with some questions. So he answered the questions, as he always does, and he gave me some great material to work with. And I asked him about a couple other things, and I mentioned something that I had talked about in a presentation I had just done that I was really proud of, where I thought I'd said something that was really smart and counterintuitive, where I argued with, like, some famous weight loss expert. And Alan came back and said, well, you know, actually, Lou, I agree with the expert. You know, it's this. I won't get into the details because it's geeky, but basically he said, yeah, you know, that guy's right. And, you know, he didn't come right out and say you're wrong. But what he meant was you're wrong. So so a couple of weeks later, I emailed Alan and said, "Hey, Alan, let's write a book together." And he emailed me back and said, "Okay." And 2 years later, we have a book.
Oh, so that's it. All you got to do is you wait 2 years, and then a book pops out, and you're good to go.
Yeah. It's like elephant gestation, I think, except that may not be exactly 2 years. Maybe it's more like whale gestation. I don't know. There were a lot of intermediate steps in there, and mm-hmm. and we would put everybody to sleep if I told you what those were. But that's about my average, about 2 years from, hey, let's write a book, to, oh, shit, the book's out. Now we got to figure out a way to promote it.
So Alan, what was the process like for you? Was it like just a lot of phone conferences and stuff like that? You know, Lou throwing you a subject and then you kind of going in depth about it and then sending some text back and having that edited. What was the process like for you?
Well, it consisted of a lot of me trying to wake up. Primarily. And you know, thinking back, I mean, this is a year or two back, so it's almost like I'm trying to actually remember how things came to materialize. And it really was just a flurry of emails, phone calls, epiphanies, the occasional you know, knockdown, drag out. But yeah, it I don't know. I guess it's sort of like a quiet storm of sorts, and thankfully some good stuff came out of it. And I have to say, I mean, Lou being the veteran in the game with writing books, he was pretty much the captain of the ship, and so I tried to do my best to essentially follow his lead. So yeah, that, I mean, in a nutshell, that's what it was.
So Lou, when you got the idea for the book, I guess, what was your, you know, for going back to sixth grade, what was your thesis statement that you wanted to, you know, put out there for the book? Because, you know, people have listened to the show in the past, you know, you've helped put together, you know, a lot of projects, a lot of great books. So what was kind of your mission statement with this one?
My mission statement, my original, very original idea was incredibly stupid. I had this idea that, you know, there were like weight loss books out there for people based on their religion or their politics or you know.
Wait.
And I know we're going to talk about that later. So I thought, why not a book for just really smart, nerdy people with a lot of funny, you know, sci-fi references? And Alan and I can riff on Lord of the Rings and how they, you know, didn't need a weight loss plan because they were climbing up the fucking hill to the top of Mordor to throw the ring in. And that was like the dumbest idea I've ever had. And I can't remember at what point I got disabused of that. Probably the first time I mentioned it out loud. I was told, boy, that's a really stupid idea. So the original title we came up with was called The Macro Diet. Mm-hmm. And the idea was to use the word macro, both literally talking about macronutrients and also metaphorically talking about what's really important. Let's focus on the really big thing, which is we're going to find a way to quantify what you're eating so that weight loss isn't a random process. So it's a targeted process where you know exactly where you are, mm-hmm. exactly where you want to end up. And every part of the plan is based on that endpoint. So once you get to that endpoint, you're already there. You're already at maintenance level. So there's not going to be this two-step process where, one, you just lose the weight. Two, now you have to figure out how it stays lost because you're off the diet and you have no idea what to do. So that was the title, The Macro Diet, focus on what's important, you know, quantifying nutrition on one hand and progressive resistance training on the other to make sure you have the muscle and the metabolic boost that goes along with that, that you're using all that protein in your diet. And when we got to Rodale, a friend of mine, Jeff Satari, was the editor, and he loved the idea, but he had a title that he'd already tested with readers. Mm-hmm. Called Lean Muscle Diet. And he said, can we call this a Lean Muscle Diet? And I thought about it for like 5 seconds, and I said, yes. And that's how the book came about.
So I'm going to take one step back. And you mentioned weight loss books or diet books based on religion. Is this a real thing?
Oh, sure. Yeah, there's a bunch of them out there. Like the David or the Daniel or the you know, something diet just based on either biblical principles or, you know, tidbits in the New Testament. I don't know. I've actually not picked
wow.
them up. But, you know, I mean, there's a diet book for everything. I mean, you know, you put type the word paleo in and, you know, it's a bestseller. Type the word cleanse in. It's a mega bestseller.
But before we move on, Alan, you're really known for kind of your no BS approach to a lot of the information that you give out, whether it be in something like the research review or just in the articles that you produce, and staying away from a lot of the, I'm going to use the word bro science, I guess, if that's okay. So, you know, this is like a big commercial product with Men's Health and stuff like that. You've worked with them in the past, but is there anything that you wanted to make sure in terms of like the messaging that was in this book to make sure it didn't have that bro science feel to it? Not that stuff, you know, comes from Men's Health. They do a great job, and we work with them at MBSC, but, you know, I just was kind of curious if there was anything that you wanted to make sure there was in there in terms of wording or content or anything like that.
Well, the interesting thing about writing this book with Lou was that I did it while simultaneously co-authoring peer-reviewed papers with Brad Schoenfeld and other guys like James Krieger. And so it was a really interesting mix of work. I mean, I've got Lou on one hand, who's got a really tight pulse on the general public and what really reaches them and what really resonates with them. While on the other hand, I've got, you know, Brad and James on the other side, and we're, you know, just dishing out the technical minutia and all of that stuff. So I felt like Lyle McDonald. I was like walking in two worlds during the making of the book. So
yeah, except you got to keep your clothes on.
Well.
This is great. This is going to get lots of downloads. I love this so far.
For the most part, you know, for the most part. And so, I mean, really, I was just fully immersed in the science of things. And I really kind of depended on Lou to make my contributions palatable for the masses. And you know, just to not overcomplicate the concepts and the details and sort of make it be able to crystallize with them so they can decipher really what we're trying to say, trying to preserve the scientific side without convoluting it too much and making sure that it's understandable.
That actually relates really good to a question that we got off of Facebook from David, who wanted to ask you guys to discuss, you know, closing the gap between the research and the real world application, like how to not make sure it is too you know, nerdy or too complicated for the general public, because obviously this is a book that's going to be, you know, on bookshelves all over the place at everyone that is getting ready to make their New Year's transformation, you know, with this release date, they have to understand that. So is that what you're kind of talking about there, Alan?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no, absolutely no at all printed in the book. I don't even know if there's an "and colleagues" printed.
No, there is in the notes.
Is there? Okay.
We have a notes section in the back where we strenuously annotate all of our all of the research that's the basis. So if you see a paragraph and you see something in there that says, well, you know, studies at such and such university or back in, you know, 1995, scientists figured out A, B, or C. Well, you can go to the notes under that chapter, and it'll tell you what specific studies we're talking about there. And that's where you see the et als. But, you know, you've got to – when you're writing a book with a goal of actually helping people and helping a lot of people, you have to tell a story. Mm-hmm. You have to make sure that people are engaged and they understand that what you're saying is based on something, that you're not just pulling bullshit out of the air.
Yeah.
But – you can't overwhelm them with that, because they wouldn't have picked up the book if they didn't think you knew what you were talking about and that you understood what the research is. So you're just telling them this research is out there and it showed this really interesting thing. And for the specific citation, well, there's another place in the book where you can go and you can find that, and it's easy to find. And you can, you know, you can go to PubMed and look up all these studies that we list in there. Or you can go to the, you know, at worst, you can go to the library and look up a textbook maybe where there's a specific page citation. Other than that, we try to make it as easy as possible for people to, people who really want those details to be able to figure out what was behind it. But we know that the overwhelming majority of people just want to know what works, but don't assume we're idiots. Assume that we want to know why it works. We just don't want to know every Latin word for, you know, every hormone and every, you know, and every metabolic interaction.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah, something I want to mention that is a really cool part of the book is the notes section. So, like, for example, when we talk about protein requirements, we've got a note, we've got an extra note on that that you can look up in the back, where we give the details and the citation, for example, of Eric Helm's systematic review on protein needs. And this is something that we purposely didn't cram into our discussion of protein needs. So like the behind-the-scenes stuff, that sort of the science-y references and all of that stuff is in the notes section. And it's not just your typical bibliography or reference lists. There's commentary back there too, which is really cool.
Yeah, and some of it's pretty off the wall. I went off at one point and just listed all the cigarette company jingles I could remember from the 1960s, back when they used to have cigarette commercials on TV. You know, I wasn't gonna burden readers with that, but it's like, wow, I sat down and made a list of all of these for like one sentence in the book. Yeah, I may as well put it somewhere. So there is a lot of that. There's also some fun stuff back there, but mainly, you know, as Alan said, it's the studies we used, and in some cases we go into detail about why we use these studies and not others. Which, you know, is something that I know drives Alan nuts and you know, and people who care about the science of what we do, that a lot of the most popular books out there are really, you know, the explanation of why their magical thing works is you know, that they may have more references than we do, but if you actually go back in and you look at them, you'll see, well, this is just all cherry-picked. These are animal studies. It doesn't have, you know, sometimes they list studies that don't have anything to do with what their, you know, what their topic was. But they know that nobody's going, that very few people are going to go in there and look in those kind of details. So at a certain, you know, so at one level, we assume that our readers trust that we're not cherry-picking studies, that this is, you know, that most of what's in the book is based on the preponderance of expert opinion based on the evidence that exists, that we're not just cherry picking some stuff to support a favorite, you know, a favorite premise or to give us a magical hook, which obviously our book doesn't have. We would sell a lot more if we had some big hook that, you know, we could support with cherry picked evidence. Mm-hmm. But neither of us has any interest in doing that. I'm too old and Alan's too young.
let's talk about these books out there that are kind of based off of, you know, the blank diet, something that, you know, is based off of a certain amount of restrictions that are the magic formula to get people to where they want to go. So Alan, I want to kind of ask you just to, you know, talk about your experience from the audience that you talk to, who come to you that have been on these fad diets, or I'm sure you've gone through everything that is possibly out there to kind of see like all this crap that they're, you know, writing in these books to try to get on the store shelves and sell some copies. So, you know, what are your thoughts on the big like fad diets out there? I know you've done a lot of writing in the past about, you know, paleo and low carb diets and whether those potentially are a little bit weaker on the research side?
Yeah, well, the common thread amongst fad diets is that they essentially trick you into eating less. And so if a given diet has a list of foods, an extensive list of foods that you need to avoid, well then, heck, you're going to end up eating less total food, period. Same thing goes with diets that vilify or demonize or eliminate an entire macronutrient, like carbohydrate, for example. Cut out carbohydrate. Well, then you're going to be consuming less calories, period. And that is how all of the fad diets work. They create some sort of fear of a given nutrient or food group, and then you end up avoiding it, at least for a temporary period. and then you lose weight at least for a temporary period. And that's the long and the short of how all fad diets work. This is not to say that some people do better on low carbohydrate diets, but that's really the mechanism of it. I mean, some people, just by personal preference, they'll want a richer, fattier, less carby diet, while others with specific athletic goals, you know, maybe just shooting themselves in the foot if they neglect carbohydrate. Mm-hmm. The paleo diet is sort of a special case because it's kind of this combination of good science and pseudoscience and folklore. So it makes for kind of an interesting story, the paleo diet. But the good stuff about the paleo diet is it has pushed people towards eating more whole, unrefined, you know, minimally processed type of foods. But at the same time, it's got this yin-yang effect because then it creates neurosis in people over certain foods and certain food groups that really don't warrant that kind of fear. So yeah, that's in a nutshell, that's the story of fad diets. They trick you into eating less.
So Lou, was there like an approach that you wanted to have with how you guys were going to outline the nutrition and the diet portion of the book to make sure that it is not something that is super overwhelming, and making sure that it is something that can be applicable to anyone? How did you approach that?
Well, what I wanted to do was use Alan's core idea, which is that you start with your target body weight. Mm-hmm. Most of these diets, what Alan was just talking about, where they trick you into doing something, what you end up with, and I know I mentioned this earlier, is you end up with random weight loss because you don't know how many calories you're eating. You don't know how many calories you're cutting. All you know is that you're eating less, and at first you probably feel better. When you get to the point where you've hit your limit on that diet and you've basically your body's only going to let you go so far on any given calorie deficit. So you don't know exactly how you created the calorie deficit or how big it is. All you know is that at a certain point, you can't lose any more weight unless you can figure out a way to cut even more calories, which you absolutely can't do because you're really at the limits of your willpower and self-control, and you're starting to get hungry again, and you're starting to crave some of the foods perhaps that you were told not to eat. So what I wanted to do with this plan was give people a quantifiable way to reach their target, which means they have to start with a target, and Alan shows them how to do that. Now it's not even a sneaky thing because he spells out what he's doing. Is he's not really asking people to pick a target weight. What he's asking them to do is pick a target body composition. So we give people some simple ways, just using online calculators, to figure out, you know, around what their body fat percentage is now. And they figure out, well, if I lose X number, you know, if I lose X number of pounds, what body fat percentage am I shooting for? What do I want to look like when I'm done? And then we give them some realistic ideas about how much they can lose in any given amount of time. But what we're hoping to do is that people will focus on a six-month window, which in weight loss research, all the time that I've been looking at weight loss research for my job as a fitness writer, there's always this six-month phenomenon where the most weight is lost at about the six-month mark. And then from 6 months to 1 year or 2 years or however long the study goes, people almost always regain some of that weight. So 6 months is usually where people get have the most weight loss, no matter what diet is being studied. Mm-hmm. So what I wanted to do was get people to focus on the 6 months, but not just on how much they can lose in 6 months, because that's if they regain the weight, then we've lost. What we wanted to do was get them to focus on 6 months with a realistic target, and once they hit that target, to have a plan to stay right there for basically as long as they want to stick with the plan. And that's what I thought was really different about Alan's approach to nutrition, and that's what I wanted to put in a book. That's what we did put in a book, so I guess now, you know, readers get to tell us if that's the approach they want.
Yeah, and I thought it was really interesting that you guys almost gave a bunch of examples of like body types and kind of where, you know, someone might be starting off with when they start reading the book, and then the steps that they're going to need to take or what they're going to need to look at to continue on. Alan, I don't know if you had anything to add to what Lou said about how you guys structured all that stuff.
Well, one of the cool things about the book that I've seen is missing in a lot of books is kind of looking at the range of subject types. And so you've got this continuum of the high burning neat freak, so to speak, the hard gainer, who has a tough time putting on weight, putting on muscle.
Well, Alan, could you just stop real quick and explain what neat is? Because I think that's a concept that I think in the scientific community, everyone understands what you mean. But I think among readers, it's probably that might be new to a lot of them.
I just said neat freak and expected everybody to know what that is. Great.
Lee Peel has yelled at people about it before, but she also hasn't been on it in a while. So that would be good for a refresher. Good call.
I'm convinced Lee Peel doesn't really exist. I think you guys just made her up.
Well, you know what? I can really get a good high pitched voice when I need to pull it out of my ass. But also, Lee Peel is much prettier than I am and much smarter than I am. So I cannot pull that side off.
All right.
Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Hello. Hi, Lee. Shout out to Lee Peel. NEAT is the acronym for non-exercise activity thermogenesis. So this, in plain English, is an increase in the amount of calories that you burn that is separate from conscious training activities. So we're talking about an increase in fidgeting, an increase in even while you sleep, tossing and turning and that sort of thing. Increase in muscle contraction, all of these things that dovetail into an increased caloric burn, an increased energy output. And some people have a great propensity for NEAT to ramp up quite a bit, and in many cases, ramp up enough to offset their efforts to gain weight because their body is sort of burning calories behind their back, so to speak. So you've got that population on one end of the continuum, and on the other end of the continuum you've got your classic desk jockey or deconditioned for the last couple decades kind of guy, physically inactive, in quotes you can call him, even metabolically challenged, or that's a little bit of a highly charged word, but we're talking about the opposite of a hard gainer, opposite of an athletic type, somebody who at least in their perception can just look at food and gain fat on their belly. So we cover the continuum of that. And then you got people in between on that continuum. You got the brotacular guys, you got the skinny fats, you've got a bunch of archetypal subjects that we tackle and that we cover the programming for. So I'm pretty proud of that aspect of the book, as long as people can really kind of focus in and get in the mood to crunch some numbers.
This is the time where I like to just take 1 minute and thank one of our Patreon supporters, and really thank everyone out there that is helping to support the show through patreon.com/thefitcast. And I want to thank Danny Foley, who is supporting the show at $5 per month, or $5 per episode, just jumped on the bandwagon to support the show through Patreon. So thank you, Danny. And again, thank you to everyone else out there who is helping make sure that the show gets produced every single week. So let's continue talking about the book. And we hit on some of the nutrition side of things. And of course, it wouldn't be a well-rounded fitness book without a good training program in there too. So Lou, what was the thought process behind, the training program for that? How has it evolved, from what you've done in the past?
Well, what I've done in the past is not write the training program. I've always, I've co-authored books with a couple books with Chad Waterbury, mm-hmm. five books going on six books with Alan Cosgrove. And those guys are great trainers. They always have new ideas, terrific workout programs. But what inspired the workout program for this was just watching young guys in my gym do the most stupid workouts I've ever seen. And I've been working out in gyms since 1980, and I will admit that in 1980, I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. I didn't really sort of get you know, get an idea until I started writing about this for a living. And I was, you know, around trainers all the time and started to slowly pick up, got my training certifications. And, you know, at that point, it was like, oh, man, if I would have been doing this 20 years ago, I would have been, you know, that would have been fantastic. But I didn't. So,
Lou, do you have any memory of what Lou Schuler's training program looked like in the early 80s?
Oh, my God. I'll bet there were a lot of bench presses, sit-ups, and, you know, lat pull-downs. I mean, seriously, when I was
the big three.
Yeah. So I used to do when I was in high school, I used to do pull-ups to warm up for lat pull-downs. That's how stupid I was. I thought pull-ups were like good for your wrist, you know, because I guess I had a really weak grip, so I could like feel it in my forearms. So I thought, oh man, this is a great, you know, this is a great wrist strengthening exercise. That's important, so I'll do that first. That's how stupid I was. So it's like I got some gains in spite of myself because I was doing the right things for the wrong reasons, and you know, which is not, you know. Getting a little off topic, but I saw this one guy, and this is he was doing. He took up a cable. There was one at this gym. There was like one place where there were two cable stacks next to each other, so you could do cable crossovers there. But most people didn't because it was a crowded gym, and usually you had two people working out on, you know, one person on each stack doing something with the one cable. This one guy went over to the cable crossover, and he took it up for a half hour. And during that half hour, he was doing low rep cable crossovers to failure for a half hour. Mm-hmm. And he was taking like 3 minutes in between sets. And if anybody tried to work in, he said, no, 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 I'm still using it. I'm still using it. So at one point, the guy walked away. I came over and I started, you know, to set up. And a trainer came over with a client, started to set up. He came running back over. He goes, no, I'm still using it. Still using it. And I said, dude, you've been here for a long time. And he goes, I just got two more sets. So we stood there, the trainer and me and other people, because a lot of people witnessed this, and we watched a guy do his two sets. And then afterwards, I went over and said, okay, so you're two sets. So now we're ready to go. And he's like, no, I still got more sets. So the biggest guy in the gym, this, you know, by you know, the standards of this gym, he was the biggest power lifter in the place. You know, so we're talking about a guy well north of, you know, 220 pounds, mm-hmm. big guy. He walks over, man, can I work in? The skinny little guy looks at him and goes, no, man, I'm still doing more sets. So that was I watched that guy, and I saw this guy like for an entire summer. I guess he was home for college, and I watched him. He just did this stupid shit day after. Every time I was in there, he was just doing stupid shit. You know, he'd walk into the gym and he'd do like low rep front raises, you know, with like really heavy weights. It's like, dude, you shouldn't even be overhead pressing with that. You're not ready. That's not a good weight for you. But, you know, I didn't say anything, but I just watched this and I thought, young people, and it wasn't just him. There were lots of other people doing lots of stupid things. So I was looking at him and go, man, this is worse than anything I've ever seen, because I don't know where these guys are getting these routines, if it's YouTube or they've got like some, you know, stupidbodybuilder.com, and where they're getting this shit. But they're doing stuff, and they obviously have a plan, and it is a stupid plan. So I said, okay, well, what we need in this book to go with Alan's terrific diet is we just need to show these guys the basics of progressive resistance. Show mm-hmm. them what's important. Show them how to develop strength and make that your goal, and to actually train for strength, which is you're not getting in there and, you know, and doing, you know, bicep curls or front raises to failure with heavy weight. So we're training, not, you know, beating the crap out of your muscles, training your muscles to get stronger. And that would be in the first half of the workout. And then the second half of the workout, there'd be some more hypertrophy type stuff. But, you know, the idea was, let's just show people the basics. And, you know, then we'll get to, you know, my next book with Alan Cosgrove is going to have some incredibly sophisticated variations on all the things that, you know, you only think you know. But for this book, I thought, I just want to show these guys how to do these basic things, because clearly some really simple principles have been lost in the last few years, which is, you know, so let's just get back to the baseline and then we'll get into the fancy stuff.
Dude, you're holding on to that pretty strong, huh? That still pisses you off quite a bit.
Oh, did I do a Lou going off moment there?
Man, I was getting like, I don't know if it was like a Vietnam flashback to the guy holding up the cable station. That was pretty.
Oh, okay. Well, that's going to come off like a real rant. But how many F-bombs did I drop? That may have been a blackout rant.
It's under 20. We're good. Okay, good. But like, you know, looking through the training program, like you, you guys are doing, you know, the good stuff, like you're front squatting, you're deadlifting, and you're doing like good things like single arm dumbbell bench. Like it is not, I would say it's not, for like a super, super, I mean, it seems like it, you know, anyone who's just starting to train can jump in with the book. But at the same time, if you've been training for a while, this is like a good program to get you back on track and kind of recenter you after you may have gone off the deep end for a couple months and doing some crazy training and stuff. So yeah, hats off to you guys. I really like the training that was in the book.
Thank you.
So when it comes to, you know, putting this stuff together, you know, if I was really smart, I would have, you know, asked you this at the beginning, but, you know, people that are listening to this right now and they're, you know, hearing a lot of good stuff and wondering, you know, who is this book for? Alan, who would you recommend this book to? Is it for the beginner, someone that has been training for a while, or, you know, male, female? Is the debate that people always want to ask in terms of like, is this book okay for women too? What are your thoughts?
My immediate thoughts, without too much thought, is that beginners and intermediates will benefit most. However, just kind of a retrospective look at the book and kind of going over it sort of after the fact. I feel like we wrote this thing so long ago, but, you know, really, I mean, just a year can seem like an eternity. But looking back on it, there are things in the book that advanced trainees can learn from. And certainly people who are involved with creating programs for clients, creating diets for clients, can look at the way that I approach the process, and they can certainly learn from that, even as professionals. So, you know, really, I mean, it covers a large range as far as the audience goes, but the way that it's written, it's really meant to speak to the person who is not necessarily a professional researcher in the areas of exercise science or nutritional science, you know. So, yeah, I would say beginner to intermediate, but I would definitely not discourage the pros and the advanced guys from taking a look at the stuff, because you would definitely glean some really valuable stuff from it.
I was actually going to, like, the first thing that kind of popped into my head, just probably because of, you know, being in the industry and stuff, is trainers. Like, trainers need to look at this book. If you are working at, like, a commercial gym, or if you are the, like, manager of a gym, like, I would buy each person in your staff a copy of this book so they understand, like, proper programming and proper ways to go about talking to your clients about nutrition and helping them get to their goals. This would be a kick-ass resource to have in your facility to cover that stuff and just hand them out. This would be a really good book for new hires too.
Hey Kev, can I jump in one thing on the target readers? I write every book, basically I get, you know, somebody in mind, and it's usually like a specific person. I visualize this person, how that person trains, what that person knows, doesn't know. But a lot of people, when they talk about my books, especially the New Rules of Lifting books, they'll say, you know, these are great books for beginners. But my experience, based on, I don't know how many thousands of, you know, well, we've sold well north of 300,000 copies of the 5 New Rules of Lifting books. And about half of those are New Rules for Women. And then quite a bit more are the original New Rules. And then we've got three more after that. So it's well over 300,000. And several thousand of those readers have been in touch with me over the years. Almost none of them were complete beginners when they started those books. If there's like one continuous theme, it was, I was doing this thing, and I thought it was the right thing, and I wasn't getting what I wanted out of that program, and I couldn't figure out what I was doing wrong. And then somebody, a trainer recommended, or an algorithm recommended, or, you know, the, you know, robot overlord said, you should try this. And I read this, and it was like, oh yeah, this is all the stuff I didn't know. Why hadn't anybody told me this? So I don't think beginners get the most out of a program like this. For example, look at Alan's diet. I think this diet is going to make the most sense to somebody who's tried a couple of fad diets, maybe even somebody who's done something stupid like one of those, you know, 2-week cleanses or something like that, or somebody who, you know, thinks, well, okay, so I read, you know, I tried the Atkins diet, or I tried a vegan diet, I tried this, I tried that. And by the way, I don't mean to imply that everyone trying a vegan diet is doing it for weight loss. So that's not, I don't mean to imply that, but I mean, people try these different extreme diets and you ask them why, and they say, well, because I thought I was supposed to, because I thought there was some benefit. What we do in this book, I think, is we speak most directly to the person who has tried a few things and they're, and those things have not worked for them. And they're, maybe they're confused, maybe they're frustrated, but I hope that when they pick up our book, that they're going to say, this is what I was missing. This is straightforward. This is, these guys seem to be telling the truth, and this is what I should be doing. And it's sort of like that moment where you go from adolescence to adulthood, you know, where you like, it's not even your first job. It's like you've been fired from your first job and your second job sucks. And then you finally, when you start looking for your third job, you kind of have an idea what, you know, what you really want to do with your life. Mm-hmm. That's what I hope this book is. It's sort of like the second or third job in your life. It's like, now I know, I sort of know what I'm looking for now and what I'm, most of all, what I'm not looking for, because I've tried a bunch of stuff that didn't work. So I think that is the, I think that's a reader that's going to get the most out of it. It's by no means the only reader who I think we can help, but I think that's the reader who's going to get the most.
Yeah,
I want to add to that is that the way that Lou words things and just kind of the way that, that the ideas are conveyed, it would be, it's really useful for professionals to read that mm-hmm. and use it and use that way of conveying things to their clients. So there's this kind of a special way that Lou can take these complex concepts and make them digestible. So, and another thing that I wanted to cover, you brought up, you know, whether this book applies to women as well. And it does. It does. I mean, the workouts apply to women, the diets apply to women. There really is, no hard delineation there that this is a men's book, period, done. One little wrinkle I would want to add there is that I specifically had men in mind when I was writing the process of putting diets together and coming up with calorie requirements and macros, etc. And with that, some women may find that the calorie totals may be a little bit higher than what would suit them perfectly. So, you know, a lower multiplier or staying on the low end of the multiplier would work for women. I do have another multiplier that I use specifically for people who I do consider to be metabolically challenged. But those, you know, that population really is kind of on the fringe. And I wanted to reach the largest segment of people possible with the particular calculations that I put out in the book. I just want to add the caveat that women should stay on the lower end of the multipliers if they want to be in the proper and the appropriate range.
That's a great transition into another question that we got from Twitter from I'm going to say Camille. I'm terrible with names. If it's not like John or Mary, I don't know how to pronounce your name. But had a question about female training, and I specifically for you, Alan, just on any nutrition tips or even workout tips for women that are actually trying to gain muscle and strength. Any kind of general guidelines that you would give? I know it's a very generic way to look at this.
Women, in my experience, they tend to not consume enough protein. Mm-hmm. They just sort of have that tendency as a group. So there should be a concerted effort to consume more protein than you're used to. A lot of times women consume about half the protein that is required to optimize muscle gains. And so there can be a process of them ramping up gradually in order to get used to consuming enough protein, or they can just kind of dive in full tilt. But that would be the one thing that women generally don't have a problem getting in enough carbs and fats and stuff. It's the protein that they got to focus on.
And, before we wrap up, I just want to, you know, I when we have people on, you can really tell when I really enjoy something that we're talking about. And again, with this book, I think you guys, really hit it out of the park. I got my copy ordered and, You know, who knows? Santa might be able to get it to me before Christmas Day based on how Amazon is shipping those things out. By the time you hear this, if you're listening to this right now, it is out. It is available. You can pick it up on Amazon. It's the Lean Muscle Diet, and that's going to be the best place to go. It's usually – Amazon's always great in terms of having, like, the cheapest price and some of the best shipping and customer service out there. So I definitely hit them up. But before we do wrap up, Alan, do you have any speaking engagements, anything coming up that people should keep an eye out for? And I know there's some cool stuff coming up in 2015 for you.
Yeah, man, I've got a bunch of stuff. I'm probably going to miss some. May 2015 is really big for me. I've got the fitness summit. There's like 10 different summits going on right now. I'm talking about the fitness summit in Kansas City, Missouri. Mm-hmm. The one where dreams are broken and babies are. That one, that summit. So that one's on May 1st. And dipping before that, there is an online summit that I'll be headlining that's going to be put together by Luke Johnson, Lawrence Judd, and the guys at Shredded by Science. And going back to May, I've got the Epic Fitness Summit in – everything's a summit, like I said. Epic Fitness Summit in England. And that
– Oh, this is the big one.
Yeah, that one – pretty big, since I'm going to be debating a gentleman named Gary Taubes.
Yes.
Oh, I've heard of him.
Yeah, he's sold a few books here and there. And so that should be a really fun and really educational type of event. But
do you know if that's going to be available to watch or to listen for people that are not attending the seminar? Is that going to be like a DVD or anything like that?
Boy, there's no official word on whether there's going to be an audio or video that'll be purchasable after the fact. I'm guessing there has to be, because I mean there's a huge demand for that.
Yeah, you need proof of this. You need proof of this debate, man.
So yeah, you can pretty much count on there being something available. There's just no official word on it. Another event, once again in May, I'm going to be doing an Australian tour of Melbourne and Sydney. And this is going to be put together by the two buff girls. And so, yeah, just you can just look up on Facebook, two buff girls, and get all the details there. So, yeah, that'll be enough for now.
Yeah, that's a pretty solid lineup for 2015. Lou, how about you? Do you have anything coming up going into the new year? Obviously, you're going to be out in Kansas City as well.
Yeah, I'm going to be in Kansas City, and I should say that the Fitness Summit, which you can learn more about at thefitnesssummit.com, organized by our good friend Nick Bromberg, first weekend in May, that is the only place where you can get both authors of the Lean Muscle Diet to simultaneously autograph your book. Seriously, we'll open it up and both of us will write at the same time, and we'll see who writes the more tender and heartfelt sentiment on each person's book.
Yeah, Lou had this idea of simultaneous autographing of boobs, but I said, you know, Lou, I said, Lou, you know, I think those days are over for us. You know what I'm saying?
You guys have grown up.
I don't think I ever had those days, but glad to know they're over, because that way I don't have to keep making excuses for not having them.
Well, you never, you know what, you know, check it out. Check out the Fitness Summit, just because you never know what's going to happen. You never know who's going to show up. You guys have done a great job. What's up?
You were there once.
I was there for back in 2008. No, 2006.
Okay, 2006.
But the very wonderful Bill Hartman was presenting that weekend, and my parents were kind enough to fly me out at the very last moment, and I took a red eye home, and then I fell asleep in my very first class on Monday. It was a really great time, and like you guys said, Nick puts a ton of work into that, and he does a great job putting all that stuff together. It's a hell of a weekend with some great speakers, and just a really good time you get to hang out with Alan Aragon and Lou Schuler. Like, go hang out at the politics table with Lou Schuler. I did.
No, you know, Lou Schuler does not talk about politics at the at the fitness summit. I did a couple times, and you know, it's right now we just talk about if we're going to talk about anything off topic, it's going to be something fun that everyone enjoys.
Like beer, like I need recommendations of good beers because I don't know what good beer is.
Well, in Kansas City, you got to drink Boulevard.
All right, is that only available in Kansas City? Can I get it?
I don't know. I mean, in theory, it's available out here, but I've never seen it. So, okay. But that's beside the point. The big point being that is the only place where you can get both authors to enter to autograph,
and they'll sign your body. So.
And not on your body, right? It has to be on the book.
Okay, only on the book.
Yeah, right. The really striking thing about me, and especially me, is how professional I am in person.
That's right. Because he always stops after 12 drinks. And only in the presence of somebody who's strong enough to carry him back to his hotel.
You can't do the baker's dozen?
That's Lou being really kind right there.
Talk about having a weird schedule. As Alan mentioned earlier, I am actually never awake when all that heavy drinking's going on. Back in the room, sound asleep, and I've been there for hours. And the next day, I hear all these stories about stuff that happened at 3 or 4 a.m., and I think, oh, that's really entertaining. But that was about when I was waking up.
Jeez. Great.
It's a work in progress here.
Well, it sounds like a really good time. And again, if you are going to grab it, the book is about $19. It's less than $20 to pick that up on Amazon. And if you have one of those wonderful Kindle devices, you can actually get it for a little bit cheaper through Kindle as well if you want to try to save as many trees as humanly possible. So again, we will wrap it up here. Alan and Lou, thank you so much for coming on. We've had a great time, and the audience has been able to get in a lot of good information. One thing before we finish, though, is just to remind people that you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can grab it on there, and if you enjoy it, please submit a review. Also, you can help support the continuation of the show by going to patreon.com/thefitcast, and starting at just $1, you can help make sure that these shows keep getting made. And ever since we've started that and people have been stepping up to the plate, I have not missed a single week since that has happened, over 20 episodes, 20 weeks straight, which is impressive for me. I've never done anything for 20 weeks in my life. So again, Lou, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thanks, Kevin. Always a pleasure.
And Alan, of course, thank you for coming on as well. And for people out there, make sure that you're also checking out the research review.
Thanks for giving us the opportunity to get the stuff out there, Kevin. Really appreciate it.
All right, everyone, that will wrap it up for this episode. Thank you so much for tuning in and for supporting the show. And we will catch you next time. Take care. For having fun, I'm gonna party hard until the sun comes up. The music feels so good. Dancing is what I love. We feel the heat tonight. The mood is feeling right until the sun comes up.